Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. She took over the helm of Howard University Hospital in the middle of February, just as COVID-19 began to hit the United States. Any job like that would present a huge challenge, but doubly so, as an historic pandemic changed the way the world addressed a public health crisis. Tonight, we sit down with Anita Jenkins. She is the CEO of Howard University Hospital. We're going to talk about COVID-19 and other issues related to the hospital. If you have a comment or question, lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can find me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ms. Jenkins, thanks for joining the conversation. We appreciate your time.
I am honored to join you tonight, Mr. Fisher. May I call you Harold?
Yes, you most certainly may. I would prefer that. You started officially in the middle of February. Some 30 days later, the world had changed.
So there were some murmuring of COVID. We in healthcare were paying attention to what we were hearing across the country and what was starting to bubble up politically. And we had some murmurings, but I started February 17th. A couple of the other critical team members, new team members at Howard University Hospital, the chief nursing officer and our chief HR officer started on that very same day as well, February 17th. And so did COVID.
Yeah, pretty much. As I was saying, the world changed less than a month later. That second week of March, everything shut down. From your perspective as the new CEO, what were the marching orders that you were issuing for the hospital? Because there were no hospital administrators anywhere in the country who were alive in 1918. This was new.
Yes, it was. So let's be very clear. I came to Howard because I have a vision that Howard University Hospital will be the top performing hospital in Washington, D.C. So we came getting to know people, getting to understand the community that we serve, getting to understand Washington, D.C. and its changing landscape. So it was very interesting to start. I remember that very first week. We went to a formal event with all of the businesses in Washington, D.C., quite beautiful. That same week we started, we got a chance to meet all of the executives that are a part of the Hospital Association, the DCHA, the Hospital Association. So it was interesting just to step your foot in the water of getting to know the community and the organization that you serve. And then we started to say, oh, how is the hospital performing? What do we know? What don't we know? And we quickly had to shift to what is the CDC saying? What's coming down the pike? How prepared are we? So we were able to start saying, how prepared are we? And what's beautiful about this is so did that Adventist healthcare relationship with Howard University Hospital. So we weren't in this alone. So we had Adventist healthcare and its three hospitals all having these conversations. So weekly, we had calls with the D.C. Hospital Association. We had calls with even the university and local leaders. And we had calls, of course, with Adventist Healthcare to keep up with what was coming.
What is it that was your biggest concern as COVID began to change the way that helped the business, and I don't mean financial, but I'm just talking about the process of administering healthcare began to change the way that people like yourself were looking at how to deal with these issues. Sure. I mean, what's the thing that just made you say, that gave you pause?
Sure. You know, I started my career working night shift in an ER, a trauma center, at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. So my heart was with these caregivers as they were frightened. I couldn't keep up with COVID what the CDC was demanding, what supplies did we have, what new processes, what new rules did we have to implement if my team was just fully, fully paralyzed. So, and rightly so, many of the staff members, you saw it on television, you know, in New York, people were saying, oh my goodness, do we have what we need? We're frightened. It was very important for me to take care of the patients that we serve, but I had to take care of the caregivers as well. And not just me, our physicians, our other leaders really had to buckle up our own selves and say, hang in there. This is what we do. This is what we signed up for, you know, and this is why we're here. So it was interesting that while my focus was keeping up with what the new guidelines were, and so we started communicating almost every other day, putting out emails. All right, it's because it started out, you know what? We're going to have to be careful with these kinds of patients. Then it was like, whoa, everybody has to wear masks. Then it was, nope, we can't let any visitors. It, you know, we had to move and adjust with the changing disease process that we were experiencing. So I had to be flexible. We had to be flexible. And the staff had to be flexible with us to take care of the patients that we serve. I mean, that's why I'm in this. I love healthcare. And I really wanted to save lives in this one. It was tough. And our staff members, our critical care team members, you know, the deaths were too many. And it was quite frightening.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Anita Jenkins. She is the new CEO of Howard University Hospital. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, you know, why you came and what was your charge for Howard University Hospital. How were you planning on doing that before we realized that COVID-19 was going to be such a critical issue?
So I'm going to answer the question backwards. First of all, you know, these kinds of experiences, one should always learn from them. And what we were able to see through COVID, I was able to see brave individuals who believe in healthcare. We were able to see the strengths and weaknesses of the hospital. And even more than that, we were able to see the strengths and weaknesses of the community that we serve. We started then seeing, oh, these kinds of people, black and brown, may get sicker, may die more, or these kinds of persons, and how should they be treated? So when I came here, you know, we started the charge with, we will transform and work with the history, the beautiful history that Howard University Hospital has, join this partnership with Adventist Healthcare, and become, and my team hear it all the time, and become the top performing hospital in Washington, D.C. I actually have that vision. I believe it. I've seen it. I've worked in 5 states, and my last presidency, I worked at a hospital who was just that, a 5-star through CMS, a leapfrog A in quality services, and it was a top-performing hospital, called a top 100 hospital. And I absolutely believe that for Howard University Hospital. So that was my charge. Mm-hmm. That was to come to be a part of Adventist Healthcare. So I'm joining Adventist Healthcare as well. Adventist Healthcare has a vision for their hospitals, and now including Howard, for their hospitals to be world-class hospitals. So we use a process as Adventist Healthcare is working toward a Malcolm Baldrige Award. Malcolm Baldrige is, if you win that, you win in the highest quality awards in whatever field that you're in. So Adventist Healthcare is actually seeking and going through those processes that they would become a top quality hospital in the country, in the world, in healthcare. What's beautiful about that is those very same processes, it's what I would like to do at Howard University Hospital. We've got a ways to go.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to the new CEO of Howard University Hospital, Anita Jenkins. Let's talk to Keisha calling from Maryland. Keisha, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you this evening?
Fine, thank you.
Oh, I'm wonderful, thanks.
Yes, I was calling. I was wondering, with the pandemic that's been going on and within your healthcare organization, has there been any IT challenges that you guys had to overcome with the changing, information that we receive daily regarding the pandemic, such as with, say, your patient platform or any of your, IT platforms for dealing with COVID as far as, testing, things of that nature?
So if you're talking about our computer platform, Howard University Hospital is working very closely with Adventist Healthcare to improve the platform that we have. We, of course, have an electronic medical record. We've got some opportunities to, IT changes all the time and requires upgrades all the time. And so we're actively working toward that, too. There's, that is an up to, now, when you start talking about how did it affect us when it came to COVID and keeping track of that data, we've got a lot of people who worked very, very hard to make sure that, one, we submitted data to the proper authorities, that we gather data, and we are housing that information. The partnership with Adventist Healthcare is helping because we are getting some of their firepower to help us with that particular opportunity for improvement.
Gotcha. Awesome.
Great.
Thank you.
Great question.
Keisha, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Anita Jenkins, the new CEO of Howard University Hospital. Let's go to LaKeisha calling from Rockville. LaKeisha, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing? LaKeisha.
Just fine.
Good. I was calling in. I was excited about hearing the great news about the CEO going into Howard University Hospital. I was extremely excited about it because I feel that it's a lot of students going there. It's a lot of it's history there. I also had my daughter there. I was also just listening to what you were saying. One of the systems that you was job was looking into working, was it Epic that you were saying? I didn't quite hear it. Kind of tuned in late. I'm sorry.
What was your question, LaKeisha? I couldn't.
The question I was asking about the system, she was saying it was using, I don't know if it was Epic.
Oh,
I heard that right.
You're talking about Adventist Healthcare.
Okay, yes.
Okay. Could you give us the cliff notes on the relationship, if you can, Anita, so that people kind of understand? Because as a native Washingtonian, for example, it's always been Howard University Hospital. It wasn't Howard University Hospital and anything. And so explain how that works.
Happy to do that. Adventist Healthcare is a healthcare system in Maryland that has three hospitals. We were invited to join hands with Howard University, and they said we will join hands and manage Howard University Hospital to take it to the higher heights in the four pillars, really, that make a healthcare organization strong. And so with this joining, Adventist Healthcare is managing Howard University Hospital with a future hope that we would be even joined further through some ownership. So Adventist Healthcare and Howard University Hospital are working together to reach the highest level of quality, patient experience, employee experience, and of course, finance. So that's where we are working right now. And so that relationship started, that agreement started February 17th. And that's fair. I didn't say who Adventist Healthcare really was. Adventist Healthcare is a faith-based organization that that is affiliated with the Seventh-day Adventist Christian Church. And there are healthcare f- facilities all over the world through the Adventist faith. And they are joining hands with Howard University Hospital to help Howard University Hospital achieve its goals.
Okay. Lakeisha, thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. If you're on the phone, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. That includes Arthur calling from D.C. Your next lines are still open, so give us a call. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. And don't forget, you can hear this and every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment. It's on our website on WHUR.com, posted every night after 9 o'clock in the event that you miss it. Stay with us. This discussion continues in just a few seconds on SiriusXM Channel 141. This is Harold Fisher. We're continuing our conversation with Anita Jenkins, the CEO of Howard University Hospital. She took over the job back in February, right at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to go back to the phone lines. Arthur calling from D.C. Arthur.
Thank you.
Whoops. I guess we lost Arthur. Let's go to Edward. Edward calling from D.C. Edward, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. I was calling to give a comment.
Go right ahead.
I'm a fan of Howard Hospital. I was born there. I've been going to this since I was a child. I'm 35 years old. They have great doctors in the ER. I go to the Family Medical Clinic on 7th Street. Great doctors, great nurses, and everything. So I want them to keep up the good work. And it's actually my doctor's last month. His name is Dr. Dewberry. Great doctor, great staff, everything. I love everything about the hospital.
Well, thank you so much, Edward. I appreciate that. Any thoughts, Anita, about what Edward was just sharing?
Thank you so much for sharing that. It is so important that we serve our patients. For me, I have a customer base, our patients and their families, that deserve the very best when they come to our hospital. So we started some things even through the beginning of COVID. We called it the First Impression Project. So I wanted to start from Georgia Avenue all the way to the back of the hospital. And we cleaned the grounds and we've changed our landscaping. We've painted our hallways. We are changing the desks in front and how we greet, so that everyone who comes to our organization understands that they are respected and cared for. That's really what matters. And so I want to thank you. That good experience just warms my heart. And I would like to say that we've got some great news. Our patient experience scores are improving. There are several ways in which we can judge, but we send out a survey to our inpatients, and they are improving week by week. So I'm so proud to say that, and I'm so happy that Edward is served well and that we are serving our patients well as well.
Edward, thank you so much for your phone call. Let me ask you about that, because when you first arrived, did you know that that was an issue that had to be addressed, or did you discover that?
Absolutely. No. There are publicly reported data on all hospitals. You can look up hospitals and see how are they performing in quality? How are they performing in patient experience? And as a matter of fact, my first phone call, I was the president of a hospital in Kettering, Ohio, for the Kettering Health Network in Ohio. And the first phone call to recruit me, he started saying, you know, I think we're interested in you to be the president of Howard University Hospital, which, of course, I almost fainted. And I turned to my computer and started looking up their reporting. And I saw that there's opportunity for improvement. And that's okay. I know what it looks like, and I know what it smells like to have every nurse, physician, our environmental services person engaged, because they care about that hospital and care about the patients that they serve. And so I know we've got some opportunities for improvement. I'm not afraid of that. We have such an amazing team. And all we need is process. And so joining in, like I said, with our partners, Adventist Healthcare, Adventist Healthcare has a process of training its leaders. And this management agreement, standard management approach teaches all of our leaders, managers, supervisors, directors, how to be Six Sigma trained. And so we have process excellence training. They get white belt certified. And that just means, hey, how do we get to our service faster? How do we deliver our food trays better? How do we serve better food? How are we greeting our patients and our customers and our families better? And so I knew we had a challenge, and that's okay. That's why I'm here. Howard deserves to be the top performing hospital in Washington, D.C. Its history needs to be honored by our future. So I'm excited to have that work. Mm-hmm. COVID only showed us where we could, hey, how do we tweak this and how do we tweak that? So it was a little bit of a detour, but we're still on our way.
I want to ask you a little bit about specifically your impressions, because you said you started in Pittsburgh in the very beginning. But two key places that you've worked, I've also worked. I was in Columbus, Ohio. Which is, of course, near Dayton, relatively, and I'm familiar with the community there. But I also worked in Huntsville, Alabama, I know from whence you cometh, but so
so you've been stalking now.
something like that. But I'm still on the news side. But one of the things that I can say and certainly things have changed considerably since the 90s. But, Dayton, a high population of African Americans.
That's correct.
In Huntsville Hospital was...
I worked at Huntsville Hospital.
Yeah, it was the only game in town for North Alabama. And yeah. This is the big city. How does your management style, as well as your observations about the changes that you're trying to provide here, what are you bringing from those smaller communities to big, bad Washington, D.C.?
Sure. So I appreciate you saying that. I do believe my journey is deliberate. So I started as a respiratory therapist and worked at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, a very large hospital in a pretty big town. But, and then in Huntsville, I worked critical care with NICU, neonates, babies, and adults. Kept going back to school. My leadership started in Virginia. And then I was director and vice president at a healthcare system in Dayton. I worked for both healthcare systems in the Dayton region. But what I learned everywhere is that, one, people matter. Patients matter. I learned in the South how to, how do you manage a room full of family and they're all anxious, because families spend all night long in the South. In fact, my family did that as well. Or how do you manage different types of people? They've got a Southern accent. They've got an African accent. They've got this. How do you manage the diversity among Black, brown, or white of people of all kinds? And then how do you inspire leaders and staff members to give their all so that they can do things like win awards to be best hospitals? All of that mattered coming to Washington, D.C. And what I can say is, while it is the big, bad Washington, D.C., we still have to inspire the hearts of our employees. We have to create an environment where they have the tools and processes to do their best and to know their craft. Well, our chief nursing officer has reconstructed the hospital and made sure that the units are specialty units and that the nurses will have certifications in each one of their specialty units. If you work in the NICU with babies and mothers, you will be certified as that. If you work in orthopedics or surgical services, you will be a surgical services or an orthopedic orthopedic certified nurse. And so when you inspire people by helping them be at their best and know their craft their best, we will deliver great care. All of that is a compilation of where I went. But it all goes down to every soul matters. And so I don't really care if you are homeless, if you are black or brown, if you are white. I want you to want to come to Howard University Hospital because it's the best and safest hospital you can come to.
How do you address the reality of competition in D.C.? The hospital landscape, the healthcare landscape, COVID notwithstanding, is still changing in Washington. And you have competition. You have GW. We've had Providence close. You have new hospitals coming up in Prince
Ward
George's
seven,
County.
Right?
Well, in Prince George's County, for example.
Oh, sure,
and
sure.
And you know, of course, Howard is centrally located. And so how do you how do you compete with the ever changing landscape and making sure that Howard University remains relevant, not for the immediate community, but for the region?
That's a very good question, Harold. So first of all, you cannot argue with the best. You might be smaller or you might be in a different place, but you cannot argue with the best. So my first task is to improve our scores, to improve our reputation, to improve our patients' experience so that that data that's online equals, matches, and exceeds the others in the area. You can't argue with that. We also have to make sure that I support what the university brings to our hospital. The university brings a lot of science and top doctors and top opportunities. I want to be able to appeal to community physicians so that we also have a menu of services that can't be topped. So we want to make sure that we are providing excellence in cardiac care, in surgical care, in orthopedic care. So we're looking at things, it's something called service lines. And we're starting out with 5 service lines so that we can, from the time someone enters a doctor's office to the time they go home, that they are provided with an excellent experience all the way across the board. So we will have a process. So you come in with a bad knee and you need orthopedic care. In that physician's office, he will evaluate. We will provide the best in images and lab and data so that we'll know exactly how to treat you when you come in. You will have a clean, safe, perfect experience in our operating rooms and in our recovery rooms and in our patient rooms so that when you go home, our physical therapist will be able to treat you and take care of you. So these service lines, orthopedic service line, oncology service line, mother, baby. Of course, we've got many others that we're working on in addition, of course, cardiology and brain and spine, which is neuro, stroke, and spinal care. But we've got others like bariatric surgery, eyes, and urology. So we're working on these specialties. In coordination with Adventist Healthcare, we've got the opportunity to pull in some community physicians. Mm-hmm. So you have the best of the best. You can't argue. You can't argue with great care and great service. If a hospital is big or small, historic, or whatever it is, if it has the best scores, that's where I would go.
It sounds like you're talking about a wholesale culture change.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that hard?
While we have... No, of course it is. Of course it is. But the culture that we do have, we believe in the hospital. We believe in our mission. And we just need some tools to make sure that we have some processes that make us work and think differently. And we've got that culture change to do. We got it. We can do that.
With, as you know, We remain in the midst of the pandemic, and there are going to be all kinds of difficult challenges as we move through this, even as we move into you know, the fall, one of the things that you spoke about, your pillars of excellence, is finance. Everybody's going to be struggling, financially. The government is going to be, the district government is struggling. You know, how do you plan on managing, you know, the difficulties of finances for, you know, the hospital as we enter into this uncharted territory?
You know, my love for healthcare is balanced with my love for the business of healthcare. We've got a really great team that has come on board. Joe Perry, our new chief financial officer, he comes from Loma Linda University in California, and he's used to working with universities, and he's used to working with hospitals blended. And how do those finances work? The coronavirus gave us some hiccups, but we were able to very quickly see, wait a minute, how should we more efficiently run our business? How should we more efficiently save dollars here or there? Through COVID-19, you might have known that all of the hospitals in the district were challenged and emboldened and supported to make sure that we have rooms and space for our COVID patients. So now we have a specialty COVID unit. It's safe for our patients to come here. It's safe. We had 100% of our employees tested. So that only gives us a point in time. That's true. But we were able to see, all right, how safe are we? And we were. It really meant that our PPE processes were truly working very well. And as we did that, then we said, all right, we're going to make sure that we are taking care of each other every day. We do our temperature checks. We're making sure that we're all feeling well. And so what we want to do to address our finances is, one, run a good, solid business, make sure that we are efficient and effective. And then secondly, grow the business. So you can cut or trim or be safe around your business, but you also need to grow the business. And that's the balance that we want to have to make sure that we are financially stable in the future.
How do you grow a hospital business?
You start, well, marketing, but you also start telling people and showing the community, wait a minute, we do this here, and we do this safely. We provide these kinds of services and their menu. What we want to do is tell our story in every way. We've got an amazing radiology department, for instance, and we do interventional radiology at Howard as well. So those are very special procedures that are done under an imaging, right? We do that. So what we need to do is make sure that our community physicians know that they can come and have these procedures, that it will be quality care when they get there, and then we have to make sure that they feel comfortable sending their patients to us. It's a lot of hard work, but it's good work.
Talk to me a little bit about one of the, short of the coronavirus pandemic, one of the longstanding issues for healthcare in Washington, D.C., and I can only, I will speak about specifically Washington, D.C., is, you know, the issue of health disparities. And I want to draw specifically on, let's talk about Huntsville. You're at Huntsville Hospital. That's the biggest hospital in North Alabama. And other than, you know, health centers and country doctors, and I do mean country doctors, that because I was there for 2 years. They, you know, they not only delivered your baby, but they also went to see your horse if you had a problem with it in some parts of North Alabama. But the disparities in a region like that were shockingly broad. Because you had issues of rural health where people couldn't afford it. They couldn't go to a doctor, even when those quote unquote country doctors didn't charge you, they still didn't have the time. And then you had people in the city who either could go, or then you had, you know, particularly minorities who could not go, they couldn't afford it. What is your plan to help address and continue to to deal with this issue of healthcare disparities in the Black community. I mean, that is, I don't have to tell you how critical that is.
Yeah. Harold, I'm focused on the hospital right now, but my heart is also focused on getting to know the community. I want to get out. I want to meet and greet. COVID is slowing me down. I'm used to walking for African American wellness and raising funds for this and raising funds for that. But I feel now at this point that I really want to help people understand how they can eat better on the cheap. Mm. So how is it that our inner city team members, I love to cook. I'm a soul food cooker and I'm a vegetarian. I'm a vegetarian because my mother had hypertension, had a stroke, and passed away far too young in her early 60s. And so I have a big passion. But wait a minute. You can make amazing colored greens without putting ham in it. You can make beans and cornbread and rice and collard greens. That is a full meal that really provides proteins, carbs, and real strong vitamins for your family to eat. I mean, you could eat on the cheap. I would love to sit with some young mothers and help them. We have, my husband and I have five children together. We are a combined family, and we've got five kids together. I had three. I would love to help young mothers. I know you have to go, but see if you can nurse your baby for as much as you can, because those nutrients help them with asthma, with their immune system. It helps your body. It's good for you. I mean, it is down to the basics on how we can help people. We Black people have to stop eating so much salt. And so it is so important for us to learn how to just take care of ourselves. We have to love ourselves like other people love themselves. So they go jogging, they go exercising, and they eat clean food. I am telling you that I'm a respiratory therapist. I volunteered and taught stop smoking classes for years because it is so important for us not to smoke. I mean, we're talking about health disparities in the medical community and how can they get to a doctor, but the health disparities, the availability of clean foods and good grocery stores is where it starts. And I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying we have to help each other with those tools. And that's what I would like to start with. Mm-hmm. I'd love to say, come on, community, let's love on ourselves and let's just see if we can make ourselves as healthy as possible. Let's have a weight loss contest in a community, or let's have a get fit contest in a community, or let's have cooking classes and stop smoking classes so that we can do what we can on our end so that our last, you know, we're so desperate by the time we see someone, it's an emergency to work. It's an emergency department at Howard.
You have done some restructuring of services or plan to. Can you talk to me a little bit about that and what has happened since you've arrived in the restructuring of services?
Services in what we give in the hospital?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
So when we came, we looked at how our patients are the delivery system of care in our hospital. So like I said before, we've got our specialty units. We are changing how our patients are being throughputted to make sure that they're not spending so much time in the emergency department, that they get to their rooms and their care. We want their care to be more concentrated so you spend less time in the hospital. That's a fact. The longer you stay in the hospital, the better your chances of not doing as well. So we want to make sure that we've got succinct processes for clinical care for all of our patients, and our caregivers do a better job. And so we are excited that we are changing how we are doing our operating room, so our perioperative services, how we clean our equipment, how our operating room and our surgical services is moving. So we're working with that. Our physicians have been amazingly supportive to help us give better care.
I know just about everything is viewed through the lens of the COVID-19 pandemic,
yes.
But moving forward, what is the plan for the next 6 months as we move toward the fall, colder weather, certainly pandemic a concern, but not just that, but also if it just goes away. You know,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's that.
There's that.
Yeah, then there's that. What is your plan for the next 6 months? I'm allowing you to take little 6 month nibbles in this conversation.
Yes, because oh my, who can have like a 2 year strategic plan? Like nobody can.
Right. You know, COVID has changed all of that, which is why I said, you know, a lot of these things are really viewed through the lens of the pandemic.
Sure. That's okay, because now we know so much more. If there is another wave, we are so much better prepared. We're not going to be caught off guard again. We know exactly how much PPE we have. Every week we say, all right, so we have X amount of weeks of PPE. We have, you know, we're not scraping for process. Our critical care physicians and caregivers and respiratory therapists know differently now. This is how we treat our COVID patients. Our physicians, our chief medical officer, our nurses, Dr. India Medley, she's our new chief nursing officer that came on board with me. We know now how to treat those patients better. And now because we have these specialty units and then a specialty COVID unit, we are able to give that specialty care right there where those patients receive exactly what they need in a more expeditious fashion. They're going to receive the exact care that gets them home and out faster. So we are smarter now. We are expecting that there might be an uptick in COVID, and so that's okay. So now we're not afraid. We're very prepared, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, our numbers are way low on COVID. You know, 1, 2, 5. That's it. And we are excited about making sure that we focus on all of the other kinds of work and throughput for all other patients. The patients can feel safe. And it is important to say at this point, please, everyone, be safe. Wash your hands. Wear your masks. Don't gather in crowds. It's still not safe out there. We don't have a cure, and we don't have a vaccine. So it is important for us to say, you know, stay safe. But when you need to come to the hospital, it is safe there. We have cleanliness processes and we have care processes that will keep you safe. Don't sit around with chest pain or a weak arm. We had someone who waited and they were having a stroke. They were afraid to come in for COVID. They can come in for their care. They can come in and get excellent care for anything that they have. And so I do want to throw in that shameless plug to take care of our community.
Well, and you know, truth be told, this has been an issue not only in the district, but in across the nation, where there have been an increase in the number of non-COVID deaths because people were afraid to come to hospitals. And hospitals across the country have had to take notice, not only in getting the word out, but making sure that there are muscular attempts to make sure that things are as clean and as healthy and as safe as possible once that word goes out.
It sure is. You know, the sad part is we look different. Every single employee in the hospital is required to wear a mask at all times to keep you safe, to keep us safe. And so we don't get a chance to see our smiles or our mouths, but you know, we try our best to make sure that they feel the kindness in our eyes, but that makes a difference. So they're going to see it just because we're wearing a mask. I'm not diseased, but none of that. Mm-hmm. And so we look a little different. The healthcare is forever changed because of this. And so, but I want people to feel safe enough to come in and get the care that they need. That's important. Mm-hmm.
Anita Jenkins, CEO of Howard University Hospital, I want to thank you for talking to us, and certainly just to let you know that you have been forgiven about the joke that you made about our football team when you first arrived. We have long memories here in D.C., but we'll let you slide on that. We're changing
football team with no name. God bless.
Yeah, that's right. But we're changing that too. Oh, the shade. The shade coming from Ohio. Yes, indeed.
Oh, I know it. Yes. Well, you know, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so I'm
and you think that's better?
Yeah. It's even more braggadocious. But, oh. You know, we do have six rings.
Well, we'll see. I'll send you back to Danville and see how things work.
Oh, anyway. That's not fair. Whoa. That was low.
Yes, indeed. Anita Jenkins, thank you so much. Please be safe. We appreciate your time.
It's been my honor. God bless you and take care of yourself. Thank you. Have me back again.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, August 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.